Hi, everyone. It's Augie Jones, Empathize Others, the podcast. Today, we're going to sit down with legendary basketball coach Steve Kanchowski of St. Francis Xavier and Canada Basketball to discuss with him how important community was to his success. Welcome to Empathize Others, the podcast. Really excited today to have someone who is obviously a legend on many, many levels. But to me, he's like a dad. He's been a coach. He's been a colleague. He's been a mentor. He's been someone that I can really rely on. And so I really want to welcome Coach Steve Kanchowski to the podcast. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to our conversation, Coach, because 47 years of coaching and I was a part of that. And we've been connected since 1986 when you recruited me to Antigonish. And so, you know, welcome to the show. And you know, I know you're in your office and it's starting to clean it out. But how you feeling now as you're making that transition?
Well, I'm feeling good. I mean, I think, first of all, reflecting on all my years here, 46 years, I'm walking away satisfied that I accomplished what I wanted to do here, not just in terms of winning championships, but in terms of, developing young people like yourselves and seeing them go forward and be successful as you have in your life. Those are the big picture things that I feel really good about. And in addition to the consistency of having a successful product on the court year in and year out. And that was my goal. You can't win a championship every year. I know one of the best teams we ever had, you were on that team, the 1990 team, and you ended up with a pulled hamstring and you got back for the national tournament, but you weren't at 100%. And things like that, yeah. Affect whether you're going to win or lose. So, but what you can become, you can win or lose games, but in the long run, over the 4 or 5 years, I have an opportunity to work with the young men that come into our program. They can become better people, and that's going to last them for the rest of their lives.
No, I'm glad you said that, Coach, because when I think about, I recently, got married 2 years ago, and a lot of the people that were at the wedding that brought the energy were teammates. And so if winning was everything, we bordered on winning AUS championships over those 5 years. We bordered on winning a national championship. But the community that you helped build exists like 30 years later amongst us, and there was really a teaching that you did bring to us every day that we're in this together. We are a team. We are a community. And even I know you talked a lot to me about how St. of X itself was a community around, going to class, making sure you network with people, making sure you link with the Antigonish community. So we are going to start off, and a lot of people, it's interesting, someone asked me today, where's Coach K from? And so we're going to go back and we're going to keep it focused on community. But I know you're a native of New York City. And that is a place that is this kind of mystical basketball world, with Madison Square Garden and the amount of fantastic players that played in New York City. So thinking back to when you first, started out in basketball and growing up, what was the New York City community like? Like, when did you realize you were in a community?
Well, when I grew up I was born in Manhattan, but I was 4 years old. My parents, we moved out to Queens, and Queens now is wall to wall people. In fact, it was in the pandemic, it was like the epicenter of the United States, actually, maybe the world at one time back a year, 12 months ago. But when I grew up in Queens, it was smaller communities. Elmhurst, there were some empty lots on the corner where you could play some baseball, whatever. It wasn't as jam-packed as it is now. But so there was a certain community that I felt comfortable in Elmhurst in those days. I mean, we're talking about the late 1950s. But the community, the larger community, opened up to me when I went to Archbishop Molloy High School, and I saw the world of basketball from different eyes, a different lens, I should say. When I came to Archbishop Molloy, they had previous year they had won the National Catholic High School Championship. They were on a 48 game winning streak, and I just fell in love with basketball. Like I just devoted myself to the game, and eventually, you know, progressed to make one of those teams in high school, and obviously go on to play at Acadia, and that opened the door to coaching. But in the big picture, but the big thing it did was open my eyes to a different world that went past my neighborhood in Queens. You know, watching basketball all over New York City. And it really changed my whole perspective of the world, and especially in terms of diversity. And of course, New York City would be as diverse as any city in the world. But the basketball world, especially, you know, in those days, I mean, that wasn't that, you know, far removed from Rosa Parks, you know, refusing to give up her seat in, you know, in 19, what was that, 55 or so. And it was, but having said that, when I, you know, basketball opened a different world for me and a different whole different community, that, you know, went past, living in Queens, eventually, you know, came to Canada, and eventually, through the national team became part of, you know, the worldwide community with, opportunities I've had to represent, you know, Canada around the world, the Olympic Games and many other competitions.
Yeah, that's a nice, really perfect kind of a point to bring up around community, because sports did that for me as well. And my connection with you is sports related, but it went way beyond that. And so sports also, I had a guy that I played on the national team with, who I'm doing some work with Empathize Others with next week. And we've known each other since 1989 on the national team. Like, that was what we did. So I really feel that. And so you did bring up your move to Canada, to Acadia University, to Wolfville, Nova Scotia. Talk about Wolfville, early days, maybe some culture shock of you coming from New York City to Wolfville, Nova Scotia, and then also the community that the legendary coach Stu Aberdeen had set up at Acadia.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting, Augie, because when I came up, obviously I had to look at the map to see where Nova Scotia was, and I at one time told Coach Aberdeen, you know, that I wasn't going to come to Acadia. It was too far, another country, that type of thing. And I think it speaks to the open-mindedness of my parents at the time, you know, for coming from a very close-knit and actually Roman Catholic family. My education was all through the nuns and had the Marist brothers in high school. And then for them to allow me at 17 years old education and to a Baptist school, which you know, from my perspective wasn't an issue, but my parents' perspective was, and they showed a lot of confidence in me making that jump. You know, Acadia, you know, welcomed me with open arms. There is a community there, and it was built around, you know, Stu Aberdeen and the success of our basketball program, where we won the league championship in all my 4 years and went to the national tournament in all those 4 years and lost in the final by 3 points my first year, and then eventually in my third year we won it. But talking about community, that really, you know, really brought the Wolfville and the whole Annapolis Valley community together, those teams did, and people still contact me today and talk about you know, those, you know, the excitement of that we brought to these little high school gyms at the time. The broader sense, what Coach Aberdeen did was he established a community of coaches that, including myself, Ian McMillan, Brian Heaney, Richie Spears, Andy Kranick, who coached, and all of us coached in university and stayed in Canada, even though we were, you know, many of us were from the United States. And that community that he built, not just in the 4 years of, you know, my basketball eligibility, that extended for a lifetime with myself and those other gentlemen that I just mentioned. And they extended the community to all of their players that they coached over many, many years. So, you know, Coach Aberdeen, you know, deserves a tremendous amount of plaudits for what he brought to Atlantic Canada and how the game grew in this area.
Yes. And that does bring me to, you know, the start of, you know, your career at St. Francis Xavier. And I just thought about it, that you're at a Catholic school coming from New York City. Then, you know, obviously you're open-minded enough for your parents and you went to Acadia, but then you were back in what we might say maybe even culturally a more comfortable spot in Antigonish. And so I know as you came to Antigonish, and I know many of the people that became your friends, you know, one of my favorite people in the world is your wife, Charlene. And I know that you met Charlene as you came to Antigonish. So talk about that transition as a young coach coming to this town, having the responsibilities to build this basketball program in this small town that was similar to Wolfville, but obviously had some differences as well. So how was the community as you first came to Antigonish?
Well, first of all, the most influential person in that whole transition was the athletic director, who all, by the way, happened to be a priest, Father George Keogh, you know, a Hall of Fame hockey coach, well respected across the country for his, you know, roles as an administrator, you know, with then that's called the CIAU. You know, you talk about community, because when he hired me, he not only hired me, married Charlene and I, baptized our children, but the conversations that I would have with him were not centered around X's and O's or necessarily winning or losing, although obviously, you know, we're all striving to be the best we can be, whatever we take on. But we had so many conversations about it. He would say, "Steve, this is a great opportunity for you to become part of this community, to settle down and make this a career." Now, I don't think anybody could have foreseen 46 years later that actually happening for that length of period of time. But at the same time, that's all about community. And he established those values with me, or I should say reinforced those values with me in terms of being part of a bigger picture than just being a basketball coach. And, you know, his values in terms of saying to me that the greatest satisfaction I will get as a basketball coach will not be the wins and losses. It'll be getting up and watching our student athletes get up on that stage and get their degree and go forward in life, and using basketball as a vehicle, using coaching, the sport that we have a shared love, to use that as a vehicle to build better people and ultimately a better community and a better world.
Yes. Yeah, no, you, and again, I was that affected me. And that's why I love having you on the podcast, because when you're saying these things, I really wanted other people to hear your perspective beyond you as a coach, because I knew there was a method to what you were doing in building something that made us feel a sense of community with each other. And I know that I live that. What comes to mind too, Coach, and is St. of X itself now, and I have 3 degrees from St. of X. I've taught there. I've had administrative jobs there. As you know, I was a women's basketball coach there, and I was a year assistant coach as well. I always felt that strong sense of community, like that X really does push forward. How did that help your building a program, the kind of alumni community, the X-Ring community, the homecoming community? How did that help you to build 46 years at St. of X?
Well, I think the fact that it was just, you know, St. of X is such a small university, and actually the statistics say that we have the highest percentage of students living on campus of any university in the country. So that community in itself, isolated on St. of X campus, lends itself toward bringing people together. And then the closer knit they become over their 4 years or 5 years at a university, they go back out to, you know, back to Toronto or maybe to Sydney or Halifax or Vancouver. And that community has been built. And I think the X network over the world is regarded as one of the top, certainly in Canada, as one of the strongest alumni associations. The alumni tend to follow the athletic teams. And I think that's one of the things that, because of that built-in, you know, uniqueness that we have of community, building community on campus, the biggest connector that there is after a student walks off that stage and goes out into the real world, wherever they go, is sports, because that's something they can, you know, they're not taking the classroom to, you know, to Vancouver or to Calgary or to Toronto, but the athletic teams are, you know, in our basketball team, as you know, we travel to the States, we travel to Toronto, we travel out west, and that helps connect the general St. of X community, not just from a sports perspective, but and creates pride in the university. I know when we won our first national championship in 1993, you weren't on that part of that team, but yeah. You were in a lot of ways, because you were, you know, at the heart and soul of the team, you know, a couple of years before. That I referred to, that was one of the best teams we ever had. And you helped build that whole, you know, team into the championship mindset. St. of X had been going through a tough time. We lost Father Keogh, who I referred to, died in a car accident. And in December of 1991, and the president, then president at the time, dropped the football program, which caused a lot of, issues reverberated across all the St. of X alumni community around the world, because football had been the biggest sport, you know, on campus. And again, it was a connector for, you know, for all the alumni. So when we won in 1993, and TSN interviewed me after the game and talking about what this meant, and I brought up Father Keogh's name, and I just said I was very happy to be able to do something positive for the St. of X community. And I think the outpreneurship really served to bring the university together and the broader community right around the world. So again, we're back to that word community, and it's and you know, through sports, and that's exciting to be part of that.
Yeah, and you made me. I was thinking, Coach, when everywhere we went, one of the priorities that you would have, and I felt this as a player, but I knew it more so when I was coaching with you, is going with the alumni, meeting the alumni everywhere we went was huge. Like that was, and we actually look forward to that. And one of the things that was a hidden curriculum that you taught to me, and obviously Wade Smith, who was a big part of our building the program, and my best friend, and we know he passed away recently, but was we knew that we had to network. We knew we had to work the community. So Wade and I, you know, had dinners where we were at prof's houses. We were at the Dean of Arts house. We were making sure that we reached out. And I think that was something that you talked about when we went to these alumni networking, or they were so happy to be around us because we played basketball. You made sure that we shook hands and met people and were authentic, and those connections helped me through the rest of my adult life. So I really want to thank you for that, because that was a big piece of community. I knew I had a community piece that came from Joan and Rocky Jones, but then I also had a community piece that came from St. Evette. So I want to really thank you for that. And leading into the next question, now we'll narrow it down a little bit, you know, as we're getting deeper into the interview around X-Men basketball. I know you're in the office right now. I spent hundreds of hours in your office, and it just exuded community. Like, you had everyone's picture individually up on the wall. The walls were plastered, not with basketball stuff. The walls were plastered with players and teams and photos. And so when you were building the program, what did you see as a functionality of winning and a community feeling, like even amongst the team? Like, were you aware that that was a key to winning?
Absolutely. I would say a couple of things. First of all, one of the key components to our whole success of our basketball program was my very first recruit, Gil Green. And Gil Green was a young man from New York City. I recruited him right at the end of the summer of 1975 when I just got the job. I went straight to back to my New York community to start the program in Nandi Ganesh. And through my brother, who recently passed away, who's one of the renowned basketball scouts in the United States history, probably. He directed me to Gil, and Gil was a young man who, you know, had some tough times as a young boy with open heart surgery. His parents passed away at a young age, and he came up, and he was the first black athlete in the history of our St. Evette's basketball program. So Gil, really, we call him the godfather of the program, because he not only was a great basketball player, he was a great person. And he set the tempo of what the St. Evette's basketball program was going to be about. It was going to be about diversity. It was going to be about talent. It was going to be about giving people a chance that maybe didn't get a chance some other way. And that carried on right through. When you were part of the experience when we brought Rashard Bella and Guy Mbango and Aristide from the Central African Republic, and you know, had a chance to not just win basketball games, although we won a lot of those, but we changed lives. And I think that whole community. And it's interesting. Gil Green was I'm still in touch with him almost every day, recently especially. And when he came to St. Evette's, he chose number 42 as a uniform number, and that was because that was Jackie Robinson's number. And the only picture of all the 250 or so pictures I had previously in my office, the only non-basketball picture was a picture of Jackie Robinson, because of what he did to change the whole world of sports and in a lot of ways society particularly in North America. So, you know, through sport, you can really change communities. Through sport, you can change lives. And, that's my brother did it through recruiting high school players and directing them to the right, university decisions to give them the opportunity to build their lives in a positive way. And I did it through coaching. So I think that speaks a lot to our parents. When I look back, and especially reflecting the fact that, you know, that I lost my brother 3 months ago, and I've done some reflecting and looking back and say, well, wow, you know, the values that our parents, you know, gave us really were reflected in Tom's career, and I'd like to think my career as well.
I would agree with you, Coach, and I think about too, in this little known fact, you know, you ran a summer basketball camp, and was that 26 or 27 years? How many years did you run that?
31.
Okay, I was way off. 31 years you ran a summer camp. Yep. And I always remember, Coach, that you would have guys like Chris Ross, Wade Smith, Jeff White, Todd McKillop, John Buston, myself. And I always thought, as I looked around, that very few coaches had people work their summer camp beyond who were the students that were student athletes who were on campus at the time. Because obviously it was a way to make a little bit of summer money, to work on your skills. And also when young people are coaching, they're also learning. That was always there. But there was this uniqueness, which speaks to community, that you had around one of the most successful overnight camps in the AUS, in the region, and most likely, I think, in the country, was this sense of community. And I think about the amount of male and female players that went to St. Evex basketball camp that didn't play varsity basketball in their lives. But for that week that they were at camp, they had the university experience, the community. So we had cafeteria, they were in residence. They got to socialize the same way you do. And you really gave them a sneak peek into what it's like to be at university and what the university community is like. Was that, you know, and just to, as a quick flashback, was that a conscious decision to make, to create that basketball camp was so unique in being a week long overnight with the amount of students and players that were there?
Well, I would like to think it was, but at the same time, I think it evolved, and it evolved because of people like yourself, because of Wade, people like Wade Smith, Chris Ross, as you mentioned, and many others that have continually come back, you know, working, you know, St. Evex graduates, you know, male and female who come back and work at the camp. And that's one of the things I'm going to miss the most of, you know, my retirement from St. Evex, because we put 9,000, I mean, that's an approximate number, but at least 9,000 campers through that camp, and we brought them onto a college campus probably for the first time, exposed them to, you know, what it's like to be in a college campus, and hopefully open their horizons to want to eventually, whether it's come to St. Evex or another university. And you know, as you know, Augie, we were 100% basketball. We didn't have too many dead periods during the day. We said, you're going to come here, and if you love the game, you're going to be on the court from 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, or to 8 o'clock at night or whatever. And you know, so many people, I meet people in all different walks of life that come up to me and say, I was at your basketball camp in such and such a year. And they planned their whole summer around that camp. And I say this, the advantage of bringing you back and Wade and the others every summer. But first of all, I have some, you know, quality basketball people to run the camp. But, and then also I'd have, you know, my good friends around me, and I you know, give us a chance to catch up and spend time together. Since we hired our university men and women basketball players to work at the camp, it allowed for the stories to carry on, the word of mouth stories, the bridge the gap between, you know, the teams that you played on and the teams that you coached here at St. Evex. And I think that's one of the ways you can build tradition, is to have that connection between the past and the present, especially, you know, carry on and have that tradition. And that's why I started collecting these pictures in my office. Was I want somebody to walk into the office and say, wow, this tradition here, this people here has been, so many Olympians, so many all Canadians, so many guys went on to play pro, so many, and see the tradition. And I think what that served for me, and I think you were the one that brought this up in a previous interview, and I started thinking about it and realizing how true it was, those pictures served that purpose, but it also served the purpose of giving me energy. And looking at those pictures, and it reminds me every time I looked at them, I look over my shoulder the last couple of days, and there's an empty wall. And I said, I'm so used to looking up there. You know, it gives me energy and reminds me of the reason why I chose coaching as a profession.
Well, you hit on something that is so key, and I'm glad that you brought it up and we linked it, which is relationships. I think that community is a lot, it's relational. It's getting together and making people meet each other. And so the basketball camp allowed generations of players, non-players, future players to meet during that week. And I always thought that basketball camp, which usually happened, first 2 weeks in August, really was the trajectory for your teams. So it got them energized by having some of the older players around and stories and laughs and hard work, because the camps were hard work, but it just really gave energy and trajectory to start the season off. So I thought that was fantastic. And I do want to end with some questions around Basketball Canada. And when I'm watching, and I'm often have my son sitting around, or I'm watching the Raptors with my wife, when we think about Jay Triano and Leo Routens and Steve Nash and, Rowan Barrett, RJ Barrett, however, you are at the center of all the development of those players, because when you're at it for so long, you end up touching so many lives. So let's kind of, conclude, I think, in the right way, talking about your legend. Well, it's tough. I know you're such a humble guy. I know you don't want to hear legendary, but you wear that. That is a title that people give to you, and so they have. But you are a legend in Basketball Canada history. So when now you're doing a lot of work still with the team, talk about that national community. So we talked about Acadia, we talked about New York City, we talked about St. Evex. Now, what do you see as the national scope of Canada basketball, where it was and where it is now?
Well, one of the things, I went through the era with Jack Donahue, and, he was one of my very closest friends, and he taught me so much about not just basketball, but life. I was on four Olympic teams with him. He was an unbelievable person, not just an unbelievable coach. But when I took over the program, one of the things I'm proudest of was when I took over as the head coach in the late 90s, the program was going through some upheaval where there wasn't a lot of trust between particularly the Black community in Toronto, but maybe across the country, and the program. And I had to address that. And I addressed it by just being Steve Kuchalski and just saying, hey, everybody's equal. No matter what happened under another coach, everybody's coming in here with a clean slate, and let's go play basketball. And that simplistic approach basically worked. And in doing so, we also changed the dynamic of how the game is played. Having played for me, I like to be aggressive. I like to run. I like to use athleticism. Yeah. And that's the type of player that turns me on in coaching. And I'd like to think that I made that not only the cultural change under my 4 years at Canada, as a head coach of the national team, but I also, in terms of styles of play, which took the program kind of forward into the success that you've seen now. We haven't seen it on the court with the national team, but we've seen it with all the NBA players that have been developed. And the common denominator is that there's a diverse group of young, great players. And they all play that up-tempo athletic style of play, which I take a lot of pride in having, you know, introduced to the program. And the last 10 years, I've stayed on as a mentor coach, basically working with the coaches behind the scenes. All this week, I was on interviews, including this morning, interviewing coaches with others from the national team program in terms of the youth teams, development teams. And I got a chance to work with all the great players, you know, R.J. Barrett, and, Andrew Wiggins, and, you know, Corey Joseph, Kelly Olynyk, Tristan Thompson. I had a chance to work
with Nate Darling. Nate Darling, too.
Nate Darling and Lindell Wigginton. Lindell's going to get in the league one of these days as well. So, you know, a couple of Nova Scotians. And Will Njoku back in the day. You know, so it's been a it's been a great experience. I've had a chance to travel to 35 countries around the world, open my eyes to a whole, you know, different perspective of how people live and the struggles that people have around the globe, you know. And most recently, I'm involved in a couple of projects right now with Canada Basketball. One is Unify 2024, which is they basically established an advisory council to, challenge and go forward with diversity and inclusion within the Basketball Canada family, and as well as the myself and Roy Rana of the Sacramento Kings and Jay Triano of the Charlotte Hornets and several other people as well. Establishing a coaching association called Basketball Coaches of Canada, where we want to really unite the basketball community across the country. So those are some of the projects that have evolved out of Canada Basketball as I go forward to, you know, my next step in my career. And it's not going to be behind the St. Avex bench, but it's going to be involved in basketball and people and developing coaches and players, because that's part of my life. That's my life. That's in my blood, and I'm not going to stop doing that.
No, well, listen, you do it well, and you're really an example for me. I recently was on a executive leadership course, and they said, who are the people that you go to for certain qualities? And you know, I said poise. I said Rocky Jones. And then when it said experience, I said Coach Steve Kanchowski. And that's who you. That's what you remind me of. It's commitment, long-term commitment. It is that if you love something, why would you stop doing it? You know. And so, I really want to thank you, Coach, on so many levels. Not only obviously for the time that you spent with me now with the podcast, but you really were an influence on my life in many, many ways. And so, I just feel so happy to be able to kind of circle back and have this packaged on a podcast, because what I appreciated about our conversation was I asked you some of the questions and we got into conversations that people don't know about Steve Kanchowski. And I think they're the beautiful sides of you too, like the undersides, not the coaching sides and the how people see you publicly, but what were some of the processes and thinking that you had in building the program, in being a part of the Attigonish community and the Canadian basketball community. So I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all you've done. We're always going to stay connected. And thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Well, thank you, Augie. As you know, I'm proud of you and I love you. And we'll be friends for life.
Thank you so much, Coach.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Empathize Others, the podcast. We hope you truly enjoyed the show. Now, if you're enjoying the podcast series as a whole, as much as we're enjoying making it, please let us know by subscribing and leaving us a 5-star rating. When you subscribe, you'll know right away when our new episodes are released. Did you know you can also watch the video version of this episode on our own YouTube channel? Just search YouTube for Empathize Others, and it will bring you to all of our episodes. We hope to see you there too. If you'd like to learn more about Empathize Others overall, please visit our website at www.empathizeothers.com, follow us on Twitter at Empathize Others, or link us on Instagram at Empathize_Others. Thanks again for listening to this episode. I'm Augie Jones.